It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, June 6th. How are we doing this morning? Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. And finally, some gorgeous weather here in the New York area. But we didn't let the rain, wind, or fog last week stop us from playing golf, did we? I was practicing and trying to get ready for the BMW Charity Pro-Am in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm flying down there today. We'll be there all week. It's part of the Corn Ferry Tour, and there are three practice rounds. Thank goodness I need to get out there and tee it up before Thursday. But I was invited to play in this last year and was so looking forward to it. And then the tournament was canceled because of the pandemic. So I'm very excited to head down there. And had the opportunity to play Shinnecock this past week, twice, actually. What an extremely tough test, right, to get ready for any tournament. But looking forward to playing. And actually, on Wednesday, they do this Champions Breakfast, and they asked me to interview Roger Clemens along with Jay Haas at the breakfast. So that will be a lot of fun. And athletes like Ken Griffey Jr., he's playing, David Wells. They have a really great group of celebrities, so it should be a good week. All right, by now you've heard that John Rahm, who is leading the Memorial by six shots, he shot a 64 in yesterday's third round. He tested positive for COVID and was withdrawn from the Memorial. And the whole sequence of events, it's just crazy. But last Monday, the PGA Tour notified John Rahm that he was subject to contact tracing protocols because he had come in close contact with a person who was COVID positive. He was then given the option to remain in the competition and enter the PGA Tour's tracing protocol, which includes daily testing and restricted access to indoor facilities. And this whole time, he's been asymptomatic. Well, he tested every day, and he was negative until his most recent test, which was done after the second round, and that test result came back positive. And he was playing the third round when that test result came back. So the medical advisor for the PGA Tour, he requested another test on the original sample to confirm, and that also came back positive. So John Rahm was notified immediately after the round, and under PGA Tour protocols, he had to withdraw from the tournament. And he's in isolation right now. He will need to remain in isolation through June 15, which is U.S. Open Week at Torrey Pines in San Diego. So John Rahm will literally have one day to practice, the next day, Wednesday, before the U.S. Open starts on that Thursday, June 17th. Just such an unfortunate set of circumstances for sure. I remember at Kiawa just a couple weeks ago during the PGA Championship, John Rahm got there midweek after his wife gave birth to their first child. So he didn't have hardly any time to prepare for the PGA Championship either. So now it looks like he will be going into the U.S. Open without too much practice. But I guess the positive is that he's not showing any symptoms. He's not sick. But he was positive for COVID. The PGA Tour has pointed out that since the PGA Tour's return to golf throughout 50 events, there have been only four positive tests, including John Rahm's positive test. So with Rahm out of the Memorial, you have Patrick Cantlay and you have Colin Morikawa now co-leading the tournament at 12 under. Rahm was at 18 under. Brandon Grace and Scottie Scheffler, they're tied for third place, three shots back at 9-under. All right, this morning we will talk about the U.S. Women's Open going on at the Olympic Club in San Francisco. Just a great venue. There have been five U.S. Open championships there in the past, but this is the first time the U.S. Women's Open is taking place at the Olympic Club. And the women are so delighted to be playing the historic venue. it's such the club is so rich in history. It was founded back in 1860 as a training center for athletes. In fact, in 1924, the club sent 23 athletes to the Summer Olympic Games in Paris, the most by any club in the United States. And personalities such as Mark Twain and William Randolph Hearst and Gentleman Jim Corbett, the winner of the world heavyweight boxing title back in 1892, they all played there. There are two courses there, the Lake Course and the Ocean Course. The Lake Course is where they play the Opens, and it opened back in 1924. It was designed by Willie Watson and built by Sam Whiting. And then back in, before the 55 U.S. Open, Robert Trent Jones Sr. Supervised the revisions. I was there back in 2012 to see Webb Simpson win the U.S. Open there. Back in 98, Lee Jansen won. In 87, Scott Simpson won. In 1966, Billy Casper beat Arnold Palmer in a playoff on Monday. Arnold Palmer gave up a 7-shot lead over the final 9 holes on Sunday. And in the first U.S. Open, which was there in 1955, Jack Fleck beat Ben Hogan in an 18-hole playoff, one of the biggest upsets in sports history. Well, it's been an exciting U.S. Women's Open, and Lexi Thompson shot a bogey-free 5-under-66, which just vaulted her into the lead at 7-under, where she leads Yuka Saso by 1 shot. Lexi was 4 shots behind Saso when she started the third round. She birdied 4, 7, 9, 14, and 17 to climb up the leaderboard. Now, she's only won one major title, and that was the ANA Inspiration back in 2014. And this is Lexi's 15th U.S. Women's Open. She's only 26 years old. She first qualified to play in a U.S. Open when she was 12. She definitely has a game to win more majors, so hopefully she can put it all together today. But Sasha shot an even par 71. She closed with a bogey on 18 to finish one back. So it will be Sasso with Lexi Thompson and amateur Mega Gane in this afternoon's final pairing. Now, Mega is a product of the first tee of Metropolitan New York. It's just been so much fun watching her. She's 17 years old from Homedale, New Jersey. She shot a 4-under-67 in the first round, which put her in a tie for the lead with Mal Reid after the first round. Yesterday, she shot a 1-over-72. She will start today's final round in a tie for third, 4 shots back at 3-under. And she only hit 7 greens yesterday, but she certainly has an incredible short game. And boy, was she draining putts, long putts, 10 to 20-foot putts. She's very composed, just fun to watch. She's having so much fun out there with the spectators. I had her coach on, Katie Rudolph, during the Sunday before Masters Week, early April. Mega has played in the Augusta National Women's Amateur this year, and in previous years, she has competed in 4 drive, chip, and putt competitions. So she's spent more time in Augusta National than most people, and she's only 17 years old. So she's been playing so well, and it's really fun to watch her. So hopefully she'll do really well today as well. This morning, we're going to connect with veteran journalist and author Steve Eubanks, the managing editor of the LPGA. He's in San Francisco at the Olympic Club. Steve and I were among a group of media who played in Bermuda several years ago in a tournament called the Hackers Cup. It was appropriately named for sure. It was similar to a Ryder Cup for the media. There was a U.S. team against a team from the U.K. We played the Mid-Ocean Club. We played Port Royal. Beautiful golf courses on the island of Bermuda. Happy to say our U.S. team beat the team from the U.K. And Steve and I were teamed together for one of our matches, and we won that match. He's a very strong player. Anyway, Steve's been covering golf and women's golf for a long time. And so Steve will join us this morning from the Olympic Club to talk about the U.S. Women's Open, talk about some of the players, we'll talk about the course, we'll talk about several of the obstacles and issues that the women face in golf. And then Craig Annis, the chief brand officer for the United States Golf Association, he will join us. You know, the USGA hosts 16 national championships, not just the Women's Open and not just the Men's Open, but, I mean, they have so many things going on all year. And Craig is in charge of, a lot of these championships from a brand perspective. So we'll get his take on all that this hour as well. All right. Do we have any time? We have no time. We're going to take a break. we need more time in this show for sure. But coming up, as I said, we're going to talk with Steve Eubanks, veteran sports writer, managing editor of the LPGA. And let me tell you that at Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're so excited to welcome another field of world-class golfers to this year's Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Since 2007, the tournament has raised over $20 million for charities across the region, thanks to the support of the PGA Tour's best players, the thousands of volunteers, and all our loyal fans. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. Travelers, it's best.
Life can take you in many directions, no matter where you're going. We're with you for the ride and help you lead your life with convenient banking, great rates, and friendly service. Jovia Financial Credit Union. Bank on the bright side.
Under the umbrella.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori. And my guest is Steve Eubanks, the managing editor of the LPGA and a longtime colleague in the golf business. So delighted to talk with you, Steve. How are you?
I'm great, Ann. Great to be with you as always.
Oh, I love golfing with you and hanging with you and having you on the show. And we've had some good times for sure. And I know you're in San Francisco this week at the Olympic Club, the site of this year's U.S. Women's Open. What has been the highlight for you so far?
Well, I'm actually standing adjacent to the first fairway right now, and I'm looking out over Lake Merced. You can see TPC Harding Park in the background. To my right is San Francisco Golf Club, and up on the hill, even a little further right, is Lake Merced Golf Club. This little peninsula in San Francisco may be the golf mecca of America. It is just terrific here. If there's a better cluster of golf anywhere, I don't know where it is. This is just fantastic. And the golf course here at Olympic has just been, it's been a treat for everybody. I mean, the women to come to such a historic venue, they're thrilled about it. And everybody loves the golf course. It's just, I got to tell you, the rough is up. And the sight lines that they're having to pick are incredibly small. But you're hearing zero complaints. Everybody thinks this is exactly the kind of venue they want to come into from now on.
Yeah, it's so great that they're at the Olympic Club. There seems to be a trend to go to more historic, significant courses for the women. I looked at the future U.S. Women's Open sites, and next year you're at Pine Needles, right? Pine Needles Lodge in North Carolina. Then the year after, Pebble Beach. Then Lancaster Country Club. And then in 2025, Erin Hills. So good for the USGA that they're starting to select these historic, real significant courses for the U.S. Women's Open.
And I did speak with John Bodenhammer about this. He is the director of competitions for the USGA. And he was telling me that the announcements that you're going to hear soon about sites beyond Erin Hills are going to be even more impressive, that you're going to be talking about some of the classic and great old venues and major championship venues that everyone will recognize and that fans will be incredibly excited to see.
Well, and that's awesome. It's, you know, the women are getting the respect finally that they deserve. Not that the previous sites were bad, but I mean, these are historic, just storied courses. And it's great that the women can play at these courses. And, you know, getting back to the Olympic Club, that's been a venue for five previous U.S. Open championships. This is the first time the women are there. And talk about brutal. Only four players have finished under par. I was there covering Webb Simpson's win there during the U.S. Open in 2012, and I think he finished at plus one for the championship. And I just remembered that course. It was brutal rough, a lot of side hill lies, small greens, just really tough golf course.
It's tough, and it's fair, and everybody really enjoys it. There's something out here that you'll hear a lot when you're watching the championship called reversed amber. And basically what that means is if the hole dogleg's to the right, the fairway slopes to the left. And it slopes to the left pretty significantly. So you're trying to play a hole that is turning one direction but sloping another. And so you have to commit to very small lines. And a lot of times those lines are in the rough because of the bounce that you're going to get off the side hill lies. So when you're seeing these players and you say, wow, why can't they keep it in the fairway? That's why. And from this rough, it's very hard to hit these very small greens.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just been a delight watching some of the greatest players in golf, you know, kind of not tackle the course because you can't really conquer the golf course, but really deal with the challenges that the course presents. Let's move to the most pertinent issue facing the women today. And you and I talked earlier about purse and coverage disparity. What are your thoughts about that? I know the women will, you know, the winner will earn $1 million on Sunday afternoon. The men at the U.S. Open in a couple weeks will earn $2.25 million. I mean, the women have made a lot of progress. The USGA is really working on making this kind of progress. And I think, you know, you don't, obviously you want equality, right? But it doesn't happen overnight, this kind of growth, right, Steve?
It doesn't. And look, the purses on women's golf are as high as they've ever been. And you certainly do not want to chastise anyone who is currently a check writer in the women's game. And the USGA is the biggest check writer. They're making this championship the biggest and most attractive in women's golf. But the disparity, the disparity between what the men get and what the women get, it's big and it's shameful, quite frankly. But it also has a business element to it. And this is where I think people, you know, you want to shake your head and go, tisk, tisk, why aren't you paying the women as much? Well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that the amount of coverage that they get on network television is so different. So if you're the marketing director or the CEO of, I don't know, a pharmaceutical company, and you're trying to get into the golf space, you look at the numbers. Who drives the most eyeballs? Who is going to give our brand the most exposure? Well, right now it's the men's game. I fault the networks for that. I mean, look, they say, well, when we put you on network coverage, you don't generate the eyeballs that the men do. Well, it's because you throw us up there once a year, maybe twice a year. You know, if you put the pilot of Seinfeld up there and just left it alone, it wouldn't generate the kind of numbers. You've got to put us up there with some frequency so that we start getting the eyeballs that we're growing on cable right now.
That's right, and it is a catch-22 for sure. And the networks and the newspapers have to really focus more on promoting the personalities in the game. People want to know and get attached to these athletes, and it's easy to really be compelled by a lot of these women. They have terrific stories, but it's just a matter of editors assigning stories, you know, to their writers, both in you know, print and electronic media. It's just a matter of you know, covering more than what 4% of sports media news coverage features female athletes. That is pretty pitiful, I must say.
It's pitiful, and here's the thing: if you come to an LPGA event or a major championship involving women's golf, you're hooked. You're a fan for life. There is not one person who comes out here and watches this and walks away saying, I didn't really enjoy myself. The people who come out here, it's like scales fall from their eyes. They love it, and they become instant fans because these athletes are the most engaged in all of sports. It used to be when you and I were covering multiple sports, and it was the NHL and NASCAR. You could always get a NASCAR driver to talk to you. You could always get a hockey player to talk to you. They were engaging. They were friendly. They were always good interviews. Now, it's women golfers. It's not even close. The personalities out here, the fan engagement, the fact that they are so earnest in wanting you to be here, there's nothing else like it. And I think that's what we have to sell to the fan base, and it's what we have to sell to the media. And I tell them, I would tell editors, just go one time, and you'll be hooked.
That's right. They are very fan friendly because they realize they need the coverage and deserve the coverage. And so they work hard to interact with fans and with sponsors and, you know, tournament officials. And I hopefully with the media. I mean, you cover all these, most of these LPGA events and these championships for women. Have you ever been denied a media interview?
None. Not once. Never once have I walked up to a player and not been granted an interview. Not only have I never not been granted an interview, in most instances, they stop me. Hey, how are you doing? Is there anything I can do for you? This is what the tour was back in the age of Arnold Palmer, where the reporter kind of had a relationship with the subject and could, you know, you could go to dinner with them. You can still go onto the driving range and just chit chat. Still takes place out here on this tour, and they're happy to have you do it.
And I think it's just going to explode in the near future. I really do. I think more and more people are beginning to realize, as you say, how great these women golfers are, how accessible they are. And I've seen, being in this for a long time, and you too, I've seen a lot of progress. But when you still see that statistic, only 4% of sports media news coverage features female athletes, that seems appalling. It just seems like, though, more and more people are getting interested in these championships and watching these women. Do you see a little bit of progress at all or no?
I do. And, well, you can see it in the numbers that we have on a golf channel. You can see it in the number of people who are showing an interest in coming out to these events. And we do, in fact, have some crowds this week at Olympic, which you know, we haven't had quite some time, but there is limited fan interaction this week. So people are anxious to get out and learn more about these players. During the pandemic, if there was an upside, it was that people became far more engaged in golf. They played golf, they watched golf, they became fans of golf, and the women's game was a big beneficiary of that. I mean, people tuned in. They started having a rooting interest in various players. So now that we are starting to have fans come back out, you know, they want to go see those players. They want to get an autograph. They want to have a conversation. And the athletes are more than willing to accommodate. The other thing that's helped, Dan, is coming to places like Olympic, because there is an apples-to-apples comparison. People like you remember when Webb Simpson won out here. People who are a little older remember when Scott Simpson won out here. People can go back and look at Arnold Palmer and Billy Casper winning out here. So there, you know, you can look at all of those previous events, and you can compare them to how the women are playing the golf course. And you know what? They're holding up pretty well.
And the fact that Michael Wan, who led the LPGA for 11 years and made such a positive impact, will be the new CEO of the USGA. How do you think he and his team will improve things, Steve?
Oh, I think it'll improve things tremendously. I mean, Mike understands all of the issues that we just discussed. In fact, he has been at the forefront of getting the purses to the levels that they are now. He has lived these frustrations that we talk about with the amount of media coverage. He has had those conversations with the networks about putting them on network television, putting women on network television. So he will be a huge advocate for getting this done and for going to, you know, the various companies that are wanting to engage in golf and saying, you know, you preach equity, you preach inclusion, let's start putting some money where your mouth is. Is this just lip service, or do you actually live these values in your corporate culture?
And Molly Marco-Samol has become the new commissioner of the LPGA, taking Mike Wan's spot. What are your thoughts about Molly Marco-Samol?
I'll tell you, I've had a couple of conversations with Molly, and the more I speak to her and the more I hear about her and talk to people who have known her for years, the more impressed I am. She was the athletic director at Princeton, and she was actually a two-sport athlete at Princeton. She played hockey there and was an all-Ivy Leaguer. So this is someone who brings an athletic background to the commissionership, something that we've actually never had. So I think she's going to relate to the players and the players to her. probably better than any of the previous commissioners. And the nice thing about it is Mike Wan was so wonderful at creating this marketing team and kind of this machine that is continuing to run and generate the revenues necessary to keep things going, that she doesn't have to rebuild that. She has that already in place. Her job now will be to take it to the next level and be an athlete commissioner, which I get the sense that she is.
Absolutely. Well, who are you looking for as far as name value? I know Michelle Wee West got a special exemption. Pollard Kramer got a special exemption. Christy Kerr was given a special exemption. Those names are star power. What about some of the young players? I know Jessica and Nellie Korda are the sisters, daughter of two elite athletes. Their father, Peter Korda, won the Australian Open years ago. I remember covering Peter's tennis career. Who are some of the young stars that are going to shine for women in the golf space?
Well, I'll tell you, we've got so many of them. Our most recent major champion, who won the ANA Inspiration, Patty Kavitanikit, or as I like to just call her, Patty Cool. She's just tremendous to watch. She hits it 9 miles. She carries herself well. She's kind of like Clint Eastwood walking around on the golf course. She's just got all these elements of coolness about her and a huge fan favorite and somebody that people are going to want to watch for many, many years to come. You did mention the Kordas, and I have to tell you, I don't know of a better athlete family. When you look up and, completely up and down, you've got both Peter and Regina, who were professional tennis players, leaders, both got into the top 25. Peter was ranked number two in the world. And then Sebastian Korda, the youngest sibling, who just turned 20 and won his first ATP event on clay in Europe prior to the French Open. So you have all five members of this immediate family who are winners at the highest level of their respective sports. That's a pretty impressive thing. I don't know if anybody else can claim that.
So, incredible.
They're going to be fun to watch for many years.
And Megha Gane, the 17-year-old from Homedale, New Jersey, she's been playing so well. The amateurs, I know she's already committed to Stanford, but it's great to see these amateurs playing so well.
That's one of the great things about the U.S. Women's Open is the commitment to the amateur game. And, obviously, it's an open. If you go qualify, you get in. And Megha got in. And boy, what a great story. And for those who don't know her, go listen to some of the interviews. This is as polished a 17-year-old as perhaps there is in anything, not just sports. It has been so refreshing to see someone who is thoughtful and smart and polished and just, charismatic and ready. I've seen a lot of 30-year-olds who do not have the panache that this young girl does.
Steve, it's always a pleasure. We'll get you on again soon. Enjoy the Olympic Club and the final round of the U.S. Women's Open.
Thanks, Ann. Great to be with you.
Life can take you in many directions. No matter where you're going, we're with you for the ride and help you lead your life with convenient banking, great rates, and friendly service. Jovia Financial Credit Union. Bank on the bright side.
Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. And my guest is Craig Annis, the Chief Brand Officer for the United States Golf Association. Hey, Craig. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I know you're at the U.S. Women's Open at the Olympic Club, which is a great venue for the U.S. Women's Open, for sure.
Absolutely. It's got a storied history. We've never brought this championship to this course, but we're so glad, feel fortunate to be able to host it here. The Olympic Club has been just fantastic in rolling out the red carpet for the players, for the USGA, and for this major championship.
Now, I know you're responsible for shaping and growing the USGA's reputation, brand, and voice through a fully integrated approach. You oversee communications, marketing, content, creative services teams. I mean, that is a huge job considering that the USGA organizes 16 national championships. It's not just the U.S. Open and the U.S. Women's Open. I mean, it's incredible how many championships that are a part of the USGA schedule every year.
Absolutely. I feel super fortunate I feel like I have the best job in golf and pinch myself every day that we're able to work on such great things. And promoting our championships is a big part of what we do. As you say, I mean, we have championships, national championships for every level, from juniors on all the way on up to seniors at the professional and the amateur level. And so it's wonderful all over the country at some of the greatest courses in the country, you know, with the greatest players in the game competing for them. And I think what's so special too is the openness of our championships, which is really in our DNA. I mean, these are the most open championships in the game of golf. So if you have the game, you know, you can qualify, you know, if you qualify and get in, you have a chance at winning. And it's just, there's just so many wonderful historical elements of the openness of our championship and how people have progressed on to hoist the trophy on Sunday at any given one of the 16 that we have. And so it's pretty special to be a part of.
Absolutely. I've covered many U.S. Open and U.S. Women's Open. I think at last count you had 33 amateurs who had qualified to play in the U.S. Women's Open this week.
That's right. And we expect them to be exceptionally competitive in the field. And that's what's so amazing about an open championship. Literally anything can happen. You know, you can be an amateur who's stepping onto the course the first time for the U.S. Open and be competitive. You know, or you could get somebody from who's been in the professional game for a while and maybe hasn't won or won in a while and they emerge. It's part of the history of this championship that's now 76 years old.
Well, there's always compelling stories, and I know a large part of your efforts have been creating programs that shine a brighter light on women in the game, and that is a tough task, but it seems like you're making a lot of progress, so I give you a lot of credit.
Well, thank you. I mean, look, the women's game is sort of caught in this cycle, you know, where we have a lot of media outlets that aren't seeing a direct return on investment when they cover the women's game. And likewise, you can't really build household names and tell great stories without media coverage. So we feel, you know, so fortunate to have an organization like yours taking the time to promote this championship, these women who are competing. But it's something that's really important to us as a fierce advocate for the women's game. You know, we're trying to work to break the cycle, to get more media, you know, covering the game, to shine a brighter light, to put more marketing dollars, more communications dollars, you know, to lead in purse, you know, to lead in player experience and to bring this championship to the greatest golf courses so more fans can tune in. I think as we progress against that, fandom will grow and that cycle will shift. And so that's really what we're trying to achieve. And we're so we feel great about the response that we've gotten from players and the media and fans who are tuning in to this fantastic championship this week.
I mean, I'm all for equal opportunity, for sure, for women in sports, equal prize money, equal media coverage. I mean, you're talking to a woman when I was in school. I grew up in a small town in Ohio. There were no sports programs for girls in my junior high except for cheerleading. Thank goodness for Title IX, because, Craig, when I got to high school, there were varsity sports, and I competed in 4 sports every year and earned 16 varsity letters. So I am a Title IX baby, and ever since, I've been a huge proponent of growing opportunities for women overall and for women in sports in, you know, specifically. But, you know, it's also a matter of economics, and, you know, it's difficult to increase prize money when there's a lost revenue, you know, when you're staging an event. So what's the answer?
Well, it's a great question. It's one that we grapple with every day. I mean, look, the reality is that we invest in any given year about $10 million. I guess, you know, if you're a binary way of thinking, invest can also, you know, be called losing money, right? We lose money in it, and we do, because we lead in purse, $5.5 million, the largest purse amongst the majors, and we go to the greatest courses, and we invest in the player experience and all those things because it's important to us and to our mission to champion and advance the game as an entirety, but also, obviously, the women's game as well. And we know that, you know, while the economics might not be there now, it's up to organizations like the USGA, the national governing body, to push the envelope and to see, you know, what's possible. And I'd say we're quite proud of the fact that we don't not only lead in purse, but as we've led and as we've increased that purse, others have followed. And there's more purse money now in the women's game than ever before. But that doesn't mean that we're going to sit, you know, and rest on the accomplishments or on our laurels, but really to continue to push the envelope. So it's something that we're thinking about. How can we bring this championship to the storied courses, frankly, where the men play? If you talk to the players, they'll say unequivocally that they want to play at the classic, iconic courses, and they want to play where the PGA Tour plays, where the professionals play. As one example of their game, being, at its highest level and as a way to get fans to tune in. But first is also important, and that's why we're committed to continuing to lead in first. Our long-term objective is to deliver equality, but we know it's a journey. It's not going to happen overnight, so we're going to keep making incremental investments in the purse, and we're proud to do it, and obviously encourage others to join us in that.
Sure. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight, obviously. So the winner this afternoon at Olympic Club will earn $1 million from $5.5 million. The men's U.S. Open the following week in Torrey Pines, the winner will receive $2.25 million out of what? A purse of $12.5 million. So, look, these you can't hit that number overnight. And, I mean, compared to where the women were, what, about 10 years ago, it's a huge improvement, right? So you have to look at the positives. And, Eamon Lynch in Golf Week wrote about the USGA possibly signing a presenting sponsor of the U.S. Women's Open in the future, which could be the answer for, some of this financial disparity. What are your thoughts on that? And I know you can't talk about it until it actually may or may not happen, but the USGA hasn't. It's really the only major that doesn't have a presenting or a title sponsor, right?
That's correct. Look, and I'd say this. We continue to remain curious and to engage with our current and potential corporate partners where there's a direct link to our mission. As I said, our mission is to champion and advance the game. If there's a potential partnership that helps us serve our customers better, players better, golfers at large, fans, if it helps it increase the prominence of a championship, then it's something that we will seriously consider. We recently brought in Century to help with a handicap system. So when you post your score, you'll see it's sponsored by Century. We've brought in, corporate partners like Rolex, who by the way, because of Rolex, you're able to watch the Women's Open uninterrupted this week. No TV commercials, which is just fantastic in terms of the ability to tell stories about these players, these athletes. We'll continue to engage in conversations, and we'll think through it. And if there's a fit, it's certainly something that we would absolutely consider.
Is there a reason why perhaps the USGA has held out in terms of maybe bringing in these kind of sponsors for these U.S. Opens?
No specific reason. Again, it's about finding a fit. It's about aligning with the mission and the vision and the strategy for a championship or a program, a product or a service. So, again, something that we're curious about, and we'd certainly consider if it's the right fit.
Right. I know on the LPGA calendar, you have the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. You have the Amundi Evian Championship, the Trust Golf Women's Scottish Open. You have the AIG Women's Open. So, I mean, it makes sense if that will kind of help the cause, right? But I'm sure, there's a ton of issues that you have to deal with. So, so let's move on to Mike Wan, who transformed the LPGA as their commissioner for the past 11 years. He's taking over as CEO of the USGA soon. I'm sure you've worked with him in the past. How will the two of you work together, do you think, to continue to make progress for women?
All of us are excited to welcome Mike Wan to the USGA family. He'll be starting in July 1. He's just recently resettled his family in New Jersey. He was, he's sort of has been starting to engage with our staff over the last couple of weeks as he begins his transition from the LPGA, and certainly as his successor has been named. We're grateful for the contribution and the impact of Mike Davis, and we're also equally as excited for what the leadership of someone like Mike Wan brings. He clearly is a brand-centric leader. He's been on the forefront of elevating the women's game. And we look forward to what that can mean for us, not only on the women's side of the game, obviously the men's side with all of our championships, but also with our, you know, our programs, our products, and our services that we deliver for the game of golf. You know, he's a dynamic leader. You can't be in the same space as Mike Wan and not feel his energy and want to work with him, partner with him under his leadership. So we're all excited for July 1st for him to come on board. And also it's going to coincide, frankly, with us going back to the office. So we're based in New Jersey. Our office has essentially been closed for the last 14 or so months. And we're looking to start the reopening process right around the time that Mike joins us. And so it'll be great to be in the same space and to get settled with a new CEO.
Sure, that's great news on many fronts, that's for sure. So we're talking to Craig Annis, the USGA's chief brand officer. And, you know, we're talking about growing the women's game and the women's purses, the professional purses. I was reading a release that the USGA put out recently, and you have this Driving Equity Grant Program. That's just one of the many programs. Can you talk a little bit about that, Craig?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so basically last year we decided to support the Women Worth Watching campaign, which was really led by an organization called She Is Sport. We joined the collective. The whole idea is to shine a light on the problem. And the problem is that roughly 4% of all media coverage is focused on women's sports in general. As we look at women's golf, it's slightly higher than that, which is a great thing, but it's certainly not high enough. And so last year was really about raising awareness, using our channels, using our platform, using our championship to you know, help people understand that this is a real opportunity and frankly a real problem. This year, it's about taking action. And so we were thinking, you know, as a governing body who hosts these championships, who's helping to shape the future of the game, what is it that we can do that's really tangible to help move the needle? And where we landed is to say, you know, we hear from media outlets on a regular basis that they don't have the resources to send a reporter to the Women's Open or to the Women's Amateur or to the Girls Junior. And while you can certainly cover championships from afar, and there's a lot that we do to facilitate that for the media, the reality is you can't replace the sort of that special connection that the media has when they're in the arena, when they're connecting with players, when their stories are fed, you know, being fed off the energy of the competition. And so if we can close that gap, that financial gap, you know, pay for a ticket, a flight, a hotel room, a meal, help the outlet or the individual be able to have the resources to be able to cover the championship, to tell these stories. Because we know that it's that story, that powerful storytelling element that is the missing, is frankly one of the big missing links, right? In terms of the opportunity to create fandom, to connect fans personally to these athletes. It takes powerful stories, which takes, you know, in a traditional space, column inches, right? Or time on the radio or time on TV. Sure. Or website traffic. And so we want to be part of trying to close that gap incrementally. And so our commitment is to create this Driving Equity Grant Program where outlets and individuals can apply for a grant to cover costs associated with covering these championships in women's golf, ours or others, frankly. We want to help move the needle in any way that we can. And so we're excited. We announced it the other day. Our inboxes are full of applications of people that are really excited about it. Yeah. So we're looking forward to seeing the results of that in the coming months and years.
Well, it sounds great. I applaud your efforts in all these programs that it seems like you and your team are initiating. So hopefully in the near future, we will see much more than only 4% of sports media news coverage featuring female athletes, which is just mind-boggling to me. I get so upset during the weeks, you know, when I can't find the leaderboard, or I can't find stories on, you know, in major newspaper outlets and wire outlets about the professional women's tournaments. It drives me nuts. And I know that's been happening for a long time. So hopefully with some of these programs that you and your team are initiating, Craig, that may be alleviated and more and more reporters will start paying more attention to these incredible athletes. I played in many pro-ams with some of the women athletes, and they are such good players. They're just amazing, and they're just getting better and better. These young girls are just so strong and so good. It's just mind-boggling to me how far they've come ability-wise and technique-wise within, like, the last, 5 years?
Absolutely. As I said, phenomenal athletes. I mean, to watch them compete, to watch them practice, to see the shots that they shape, the club selection. I'm in awe. I'm in awe every single time I walk onto a range or by a practice putting green or I'm out on the court watching them compete. It's just fantastic to see. And look, this course is no joke. You know, it has a storied history. It is a difficult, difficult course. You know, we've had the men here several times. You know, it's been, you know, above or around par in terms of the overall score. You know, we'll be interested to see what women will do out here this week. They're certainly, they've honed their craft, and this is a chance for them to put it on display for fans who want to see, you know, the greatest in the game compete.
Absolutely. The Olympic Club, just a brutal test in every way you can say it, with high rough, small greens, side slopes. it's going to be fun to watch the greatest female players tackle it on, you know, the final day on Sunday. So thanks so much for your time, and I appreciate your work that you're doing for the USGA.
Well, thank you, Anna. And listen, we appreciate your work. You've been a champion of the women's game for a long, long time. We're grateful for the work that you do, the light that you shine on these phenomenal athletes. So thanks for having us on, and thanks for your continued coverage and support.
Thanks so much. All right. Well, that was an interesting segment with Craig Annis. Hope you enjoyed it at the USGA. My thanks to Craig. My thanks to Steve Eubanks, managing editor at the LPGA, to Nick Theodoro in the studio, to Paul Rosenberg in production this past week, and to all of you listening. Talking Golf with Ann LaGoria is brought to you by Travelers, proud sponsor of the Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 27th. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Hey, enjoy the final round of the U.S. Women's Open and the Memorial. Stay tuned for Rick Wolf and the Sports Edge up next. And I'll talk to you next Sunday morning right here from 7 to 8 on Talking Golf with Ann LaGoria.